Sequestration, confirmations, and mining legislation. Three of the issues we'll discuss in this edition of The Week in Review, and whatever other issues you want to discuss. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Friday, March 1st. We have two guests from differing political perspectives to talk with you about the top stories in state and national news, and we welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. With us today, Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Hello.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for the opportunity to be on again.
It's good to have you with us. Joining us as well, Tony Palmieri, professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Hello, Tony.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Tony.
It's good to have you both here on this first day of March. We have some light snow falling in the Madison area. I am thinking spring, though. Tony, I'll be in your neck of the woods this weekend, and I'm going to go to the Oshkosh Museum and look at Rooms of Blooms.
Excellent. It's a great event. We have, at Oshkosh, we now call ourselves Event City. So I think you'll enjoy it very much, and we're glad to have you here.
Oh, I didn't know that. Event City. I'll have to look for some more events. But no, that sounds good. Anything going on with your La Crosse Loggers baseball team these days, Dan?
Oh, yeah. We're really gearing up for the opener. It starts in late May, and we're scrambling in our office to prepare for that and get ready for another great season, we hope.
Well, let's talk about the big issues of the week. We'll start with the sequester. President Obama is calling top bipartisan congressional leaders to the White House today, trying to avoid these sequestration cuts, $85 billion in across-the-board domestic and defense spending cuts. Do you have any hope that we can avoid these cuts, Tony Palmieri?
It sure doesn't look like it, and it's one of the dumbest things that the Congress has done in a long time. They've got testimony from the CBO director, Mr. Elmendorf, that this could cost 750,000 jobs in the rest of the year. Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chair, has said this is a disaster. The leadership in the Congress all claim that they don't want the sequester. The president, of course, says he don't want it. He does not want it. So it's puzzling why it's happening. Really, all they need to do is pass a one-line repeal of it. I mean, this is a manufactured crisis. They can simply say the sequester is hereby repealed, case closed, and then go back to the negotiation table. But it looks like it's destined to happen, and I think that will have very bad effects on the economy and on various states in different ways.
Yeah, there is in the news this morning, too, the White House says these automatic spending cuts set to kick in can be and will be put off until as close to midnight tonight as possible. Apparently, the President Obama can issue the order at any point in the day. The press secretary says that if nothing happens, that he will wait until as close to midnight as possible before ordering these cuts to start. Why not just repeal this sequester, Dan Kopanky?
Well, again, as Tony mentioned, it was set up. We're looking at a little over 2% of the budget. I just heard a news report this morning that private contractors are overcharging the U.S. government to the tune of over $100 billion, which is more than the sequester number. I think there are many areas where the U.S. government could take a look at and cut without causing the harmful effects that we've heard so much about in the news lately. Let's look at the budget deficit that we've looked at and had for the last 3, 4, 5 years or longer. We were looking at a $16.5 trillion debt. overall, I mean, sometime somebody's got to grab this thing issue and go with it and right our financial house here in Washington and throughout this country.
You know, there are many conservatives that are saying that these cuts are just, they are just cuts in increased spending and they're not going to be catastrophic. Dan Kopanky, is it going to be as bad as the White House is saying?
Well, I think there was a move recently to allow the president to prioritize and allocate these cuts, and I think that is a good move. I know defense spending has taken the biggest hit here, and that is problematic in many different areas and for many different reasons. So I think that would be, maybe that's what's going to be talked about today. And I will say that I'm glad the president is calling the leaders to the White House. It's too bad it wasn't done a month ago or 2 weeks ago, but it's being done today. And let's hope something positive comes out of this.
Tony?
Well, the move to make the president responsible for the cuts effectively shields the Republicans from any blame for this. But I will say that the Obama administration, unfortunately, was outmaneuvered on this issue. They agreed to the sequester, which includes automatic spending cuts, but does not include any automatic tax increases on the very wealthy. And that's why I believe so many Republicans are willing to let this happen. Hindsight being 2020, it was crazy for the White House to agree to any sequester deal that did not include some revenue provision. They seem to have believed that these cuts would scare Republicans and Democrats enough that they would get to the negotiation table and hammer out some deal that would include cuts and revenue. That did not happen. So I really think it was a bad deal cut by the White House, but we are where we are, and now it makes no sense to go forward when you've got the budget, the Congressional Budget Office director telling you that you're looking at 750,000 jobs lost when the economy is still not recovering at the pace that it should. This whole thing is very crazy.
We have callers Randy and Key Wascom. What would you like to say?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's interesting the spin your guest was just putting on this, considering that none other than Bob Woodward wrote about how this was an idea put forward by the president and his staff. Jack Lew was one of the architects of it. This is something they put forward. It's their idea, and they're trying to push the blame on the Republicans. Now, as far as tax increases, those were already agreed to by the Republicans in the fiscal cliff deal, and after they agreed to that, Obama said, well, we'll talk about cuts later. And now all of a sudden, that's the new standard. Okay, I need tax increases from here, and we need to cut back on the spending cuts. Basically, what he wants to do is raise taxes, increase spending, and keep going on his merry way, increasing the deficit, increasing our budget exponentially. I mean, I saw something that...
All right, Randy, thanks very much. I mean, there's a lot there. Tony, what about those arguments?
The sequester was the idea of the Obama administration and the Congress together. They thought it would scare them into negotiating a long-range budget deal. It has not done that. The fiscal cliff deal did include some tax increase, but it also included fairly massive cuts. So now we're looking at just additional short-term cuts, this $85 billion, which there's no reason for. I mean, you've got the top-level budget officers in government, unelected officials, who are saying that all this will do is harm the economic recovery at this point. There's absolutely no good to come from this. Any budget problems we have are long-term budget issues. So it makes no sense at all to go down this road.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
Yeah, Tony's right. I mean, we have some long-term serious issues budget-wise that need to be addressed, and they haven't been for many years. But I want to go back to 2009 when President Obama stated that his goal was to cut the deficit in half by the end of his four-year term. I believe that was what he said. And he said at that time that these cuts were going to hurt, but they were necessary to right this financial situation that we're in. So now we're looking at cutting $85 billion. not hundreds of billions, but $85 billion. And in fact, in the report, it says that, according to CBO, $44 billion are going to be deducted this year. So, you know, again, we have some serious issues that need to be addressed, and that they need to be, and we're looking for leadership in Washington on both sides to make these tough choices.
By the way, tonight on Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television, Frederica Freiberg will be talking with Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin about the automatic federal spending cuts known as sequestration. I think Wisconsin Public Television is also trying to get Republican Congressman Reed Ribble to join in that conversation. That's tonight on Here and Now at 7:30 on Wisconsin Public Television. Well, let me just get you both to conclude, though, with sequestration. You are not hopeful, Tony, that that some sort of deal will be reached to avoid these cuts.
No, it's certainly not looking that way, which is really, it's really a leadership failure. I mean, if you've got the top three Democrats in Washington, President Obama, Speaker, or Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, all saying they're against this, and you've got the top Republicans, Boehner, McConnell, and Cantor, all saying they don't want to see this. So you've got the six top politicians in D.C. all saying we don't want this to happen the way it's happening, and yet it's going into place. That seems to be, to me, a complete breakdown and failure of leadership. So, you know, maybe the president will send Joe Biden in to talk to Mitch McConnell again, and they'll work out a one-line repeal the sequester, because it looks like only when Biden and McConnell get together does anything happen up there.
And your prediction, Dan?
Well, yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm always hopeful that leadership will prevail here on both sides, and we'll be able to address this in the right manner. I think, again, by prioritizing these cuts, it will have minimum effect on the economy. We have a lot of waste in government. I don't think anybody can disagree with that. And we can move forward. You know, the next looming crisis is, I believe, at the end of this month when the debt ceiling has to be raised again. So we're going to go through this whole process again. And again, we're looking at short-term fixes to a long-term problem.
And for some reason, the debt ceiling only became a crisis when Barack Obama became president. I mean, we've had numerous debt ceiling votes for many, many years, but it's only become a crisis in the Obama administration, which I think is unfortunate.
Well, we need to move on to some other issues. Dan Kopanky is a former Republican state senator from La Crosse. Tony Palmieri is a professor of communications at UW Oshkosh. Our two guests today for the Week in Review. We'll talk about some other top national news stories this week, including the cabinet confirmations of Chuck Hagel and Jack Lew. We'll talk about the passage of the Violence Against Women Act. And we'll also talk about the state Senate in Wisconsin passing controversial mining legislation and much more. 1-800-642-1234. If you'd like to join in on those issues, or if you have another issue you would like to bring up, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you will join us Monday at this time. It will be the first Monday of the month, and that means it is Mondays with Mike. We'll have Wisconsin Public Radio's director, Mike Crane, in to share some news with you about Wisconsin Public Radio and to answer your questions and respond to your feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio. Mondays with Mike, this coming Monday at this time. This is the Week in Review. We are talking with Tony Palmieri and Dan Kopanky about the top news stories of the week. This week, the U.S. Senate gave the thumbs up to Jack Lew as the new Treasury Secretary and to Chuck Hagel as the new Defense Secretary. Let's start with Chuck Hagel. Dan Kopanky, are you disappointed with Republicans that they didn't keep trying to filibuster his nomination?
You know, it's been passed courtesy to the sitting president and sitting governors that unless there's something extraordinary, their nominations usually make it. Despite the fact that I think Chuck had a poor interview when he was in front of that committee, you know, I think he'll hopefully go on and do a good job as defense secretary. He's got a lot of experience, a lot of background, and so I really wasn't surprised that the Republicans passed that vote for his nomination.
Tony?
Yeah, it was very disturbing. I mean, it looked like pure political payback. I mean, Chuck Hagel had the, the gall, if you will, to go against his Republican colleagues on the Iraq War and on the surge. I mean, I thought John McCain at the hearings for Hagel was at his absolute just low point. I mean, he just will not let it go on the surge. And I'm hoping, however, that when Chuck Hagel does now start his job as defense secretary, he does keep that independent streak. What I have liked about Chuck Hagel in the past is that he's not beholden to any one party. I'm hoping now, as a high-level administrator in the administration, he'll continue to call it as he sees it. I mean, that may mean going against the president on some issues. It'll mean going against the Republican House of Representatives on some issues. So let's see if, did that hearing succeed in getting Chuck Hagel to become just another bureaucrat in Washington who will just go along? Or will he be the Chuck Hagel that many people have admired over the years, someone who will speak his mind?
Also, Jack Lew was confirmed by a 71-26 vote. He takes over for Tim Geithner. He's likely to take part in negotiations to reverse sequestration and play a role in funding the government at the end of the month. Well, how do you think he's going to do, Tony Palmieri?
Well, this was the one that I was extremely disappointed in, especially given that, let's face it, Jack Lew, like Tim Geithner before him, these are Wall Street guys. I mean, pure and simple. And I thought Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont, called it absolutely right, that we need a Treasury secretary that will stand up to Wall Street, not continue to do the bidding of Wall Street. And there's very little in Jack Lew's record to suggest that he's a Main Street kind of Treasury secretary rather than a Wall Street Treasury secretary. So I believe not one Democrat voted against his confirmation, and I found that very troubling, especially since the Democrats are supposed to be standing for the middle class. I hope for the best, but I'm seeing very little from what I've heard in those testimony that Jack Lew will do anything other than continue this kind of Wall Street centric policy that both the Bush and Obama administrations have pursued.
Mm-hmm. Any problem with him, Dan?
Tony makes some good points. I'll just reiterate what I said earlier. And, it's the president's nomination, and it's hard to defeat that. So he usually gets his way. So let's hope that he does a good job and as Treasury Secretary.
Mm-hmm. Also, this week, the House passed the Violence Against Women Act, the Violence Against Women Act. It was finally passed this week, and it now this now is going to be sent to President Obama. It does add some clauses that were very controversial with House Republicans. Anyway, it would have made lesbians, gays, immigrants, and Native American women have equal access to anti-violence programs. Tony, your thoughts on the passage of the Violence Against Women Act?
Well, I mean, I don't know how to say it politely, Joy, but it was sounding like pure homophobia in the Republican caucus. And it's looking like the only reason this ultimately did pass, and thank goodness it did, we certainly need this legislation in the country, is that the Republicans, the leadership, finally did look at the election results in 2012, and they really do have a woman problem out there. And so they felt the political need to pass this. I mean, Paul Ryan, for example, who may run in 2016, did eventually support this bill. But I just found it very troubling that the arguments they were using against it, again, I don't know how to say this politely, it seemed like pure homophobia. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, your reaction to that, Dan?
Well, I would just say that, I don't think that this was an issue that Republicans wanted to draw a line in the sand with and move forward to other issues. But everybody should have equal access to the anti-violence programs. I don't really think that's an issue as far as I'm concerned.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Dan Capanke and Tony Palmieri during this March 1st edition of our Week in Review. If you have an issue in the news this week that you would like to discuss, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, talking about the top national and state issues in the news this week. This may not have been, this is an issue that bridges state and national, I guess. Governor Scott Walker has been making the rounds, making a lot of national media appearances, and there's much speculation that he's priming himself for a run for president. And in the news this morning, Governor Walker says he enjoys being mentioned as a potential Republican candidate for president in 2016 because he says that means he's doing a good job in Wisconsin. When pressed if he would run or not, Walker dodged the question, as he usually does, by saying that he's worked hard at winning election as governor in 2010 and again during last year's recall, and that he likes being governor. All right, Dan Capanke, does Governor Walker want to run for president?
Well, I'm not sure if he wants to or not, but he's certainly in a position where he can. I would say that other than President Obama, there's no one that would have a donor list, a mailing list like Governor Walker does because of the recall. So I think he's positioned himself. He's has an ability to raise a lot of money. He's got widespread name recognition because of his work as governor in the state of Wisconsin. So yeah, I think he's a viable candidate. It's a matter of he has to run for governor in 2014. So he's choosing his words very wisely because obviously he wants to run for governor and get reelected in 14.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
Scott Walker obviously is not going to listen to any advice from me, but if I were advising him, I'd say, Governor, you have to worry about the 2014 governor election in Wisconsin. I mean, let's face it, this man promised 250,000 jobs. We're not even close to that. Wisconsin is lagging behind the country in economic growth and what have you. I don't think there's any guarantee he's going to be reelected in 2014. So to think about the presidency at this point, I think is very presumptuous. And really, and even further, I mean, let's face it, Scott Walker really represents, I guess, what in the sequester debate we would call austerity policies, the idea that we solve budget problems surely by cutting. I believe in Europe and in the United States, we now have ample evidence that austerity does not work. So if the Republicans nominate a 100% austerity candidate in 2016, and Scott Walker would be one of those, I don't think they have a shot, personally.
Here's another person in the news this week that people are wondering about political office, future political office, Michelle Obama. She's been on TV a lot. She's been... she was on the Oscars. She had an appearance on the Oscars. She was on the Jimmy Fallon show, other interviews, and has many people speculating whether she is going to run for office once she and President Obama leave the White House. Lanny Davis, who a political consultant, says that, "I think she will run for something." That wouldn't surprise you, Tony?
Well, we know she's a great entertainer, which seems to be the number one qualification in the U.S. Senate these days. But in all seriousness, I think that she would be an excellent candidate. She clearly is well-versed on a wide range of public policy issues, very passionate about those issues. And I could see her running for a United States Senate seat from, say, Illinois and winning that seat. So, yeah, I also believe that she would be very much, hopefully, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party with the Tammy Baldwins and Elizabeth Warren and officials of that nature. So, yeah, if she does run, I think she'd be a very good candidate and probably would win.
Yeah, there were some conservatives, Dan Capanke, that were upset with her as being for being on the Academy Awards on Sunday night. Why?
Yeah, I wasn't upset. I'm not surprised. I mean, the president and his wife and Michelle are they're on TV a lot, and they're very comfortable on TV. So I wasn't surprised by that. I agree with Tony. I wouldn't be surprised if she'd run for some public office. She's young, following Hillary's footsteps, as far as you know. When President Clinton left office, she became a senator, and so I wouldn't doubt that at all. I guess we'll see what happens, but certainly there would be Illinois would be a good place for her to run and gain that seat.
Hey, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a very popular Republican governor in a blue state, was snubbed by CPAC this week. They're not inviting him to this conservative political action conference. Dan Kopanky, is that a mistake?
Oh, I don't know. This guy has an enormous personality. He can overcome not being invited to CPAC, and we're a ways away from 2016, and people tend to forget what happened in 2013. I think he'll be fine if he intends to run, which he has said. He will be a viable candidate. Whether he gains that nomination or not, of course, who can say, but we can only speculate. But he's a strong candidate, and I really don't think this really hurts him.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
No, it does not hurt him at all. But that whole episode does really kind of point to one of the major problems in American politics these days. I mean, here, why is CPAC not inviting Chris Christie? Because he had the audacity to call it like he saw it. The Republican Congress was not following through on aid for Sandy, and he called them out on it. And CPAC does not want to see Republicans called out. So if anything, I think they're not inviting him for that reason. It really does help Chris Christie. It makes him look like an independent, and I think that really will help him in 2016.
Yeah. Chris Christie also accepted federal money for Medicaid expansion, one of a number of Republican governors doing so. Governor Walker did not do so. Is there a split, Dan Kopanky, growing in the Republican Party?
I don't think so. Certainly over that issue, I think that each state is unique, and each governor and legislature has to make their decisions based on what's going on inside their state. And time will tell on this, whether this was a mistake or not. But states doing their own thing, and what kind of cost down the road with this Medicaid expansion will there be? How's that going to affect the state budgets? And, you know, getting back to Scott Walker just a little bit, things were different in 2010, and there were some drastic steps that needed to be taken to right our budget, and it's proven to work. I mean, our budget surplus that we're going to experience at the end of this biennium proves that. So, you know, at the several level, the national level, the same type of moves have to be made if we're going to continue as a real strong economy here in the United States of America. So, I really think that that's needed, and Chris Christie, to some extent, has done that in New Jersey as well. So we need people to stand up and do the right thing. It hurts. President Obama said it in 2009. It's going to hurt to make these cuts, but they're needed, and somebody has to do it.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
I don't know how Scott Walker is going to make the case in 2014 that it's working. We are lagging behind most states in economic growth. Scott Walker promised that if we gave him Act 10, if we gave him what he wanted, that we would see a resurgence in the Wisconsin economy. I mean, it has not happened. He wants all the success, all the credit for anything good that happens, but for when things that are not good happen, he doesn't want any responsibility. So, no, I personally, and I think a lot of people agree with me, we don't want to see the Scott Walker program at the federal level.
Yeah, there have been a couple of other stories in the news this week that hint at a divide between the conservative and moderate wings of the Republican Party. For example, Senator Ron Johnson, said if House Speaker John Boehner caves on sequestration or allows any sorts of tax increases, he should lose his speakership position. Plus, we saw in the news this week that more than 100 Republicans signed a legal brief urging the U.S. Supreme Court to allow gay couples to have a constitutional right to marry. Is there a divide there, Dan Kopanky?
Well, differences of opinion, yes. I think you'll find that with both parties, that within the party there are certainly differences of opinion. Senator Johnson stated, I don't know if he said he will be or should be, but he could be, mm-hmm. and that is true. I think that if the Speaker cuts a deal that raises taxes, I think that's going to be very problematic for the Speaker. Again, we did it in the fiscal cliff deal. The cuts were supposed to come later, as the caller, Randy, has stated, and they haven't. And so we must move forward, but I really see that needs to happen, these cuts.
Tony?
Yeah, I think there's a pretty big divide developing in the Republican Party. On one side, you've got people like Senator Johnson, who I might call the ideological Republicans. I mean, don't disturb Senator Johnson with the facts. I mean, he'll just keep standing for the same thing he's been talking about, no tax increases ever at any time. That's basically the Tea Party wing of the Republicans these days. And then you've got a growing group of Republicans, I think, that really want to try and solve the problem, whatever problems that we have. And so there, you've got some Republicans that are starting to talk about whether the Grover Norquist tax pledge is a wise idea, whether it's smart to always be against every tax increase, even on the top 1%. I mean, that group of Republicans is still small. But it is growing, and I think we're going to see that conflict come to a head at some point.
There is not a pope for the Catholic Church, I think, starting today. I think the pope's last day was yesterday. The Catholic Church's operations are being run by committee now until a new pope is selected to replace the now retired Pope Benedict. I believe that Cardinal Timothy Dolan said that the new pope really needs to stress the sanctity of marriage as one of the issues, and I'm wondering, Tony Palmieri, your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that Cardinal Dolan is already setting a not the best tone for this search for a new pope. I mean. And, in fairness to Pope Benedict, let's start with him. I mean, he follows Pope John Paul II, who was extremely charismatic, extremely popular. I mean, it was going to be very difficult for any pope to stand up or to meet that image. But Benedict took the church in a very right, conservative direction. And let's face it, the world is changing dramatically. And, I think that the Catholic Church needs to demonstrate that it is really up to date with the times. I mean, obviously, they're not going to make any radical changes in their teachings about personal morality and things like that. But I do think it makes sense for the Pope to take much more of a stand on social global justice issues, things like poverty, global poverty, things like climate change. I mean, it seems to me that a modern pope has got to be very upfront about the morality of those issues, and to limit it just to personal issues like Cardinal Dolan is suggesting, I think that's just taking the church in a direction that's not good for them or for the globe as a whole.
Dan?
Well, I'm not Catholic. I know this is a huge deal for the Catholics to have a pope step down, but I don't find fault in what Pope Benedict did. He's following the longtime teachings of the Catholic Church and the Bible, and they've always been for marriage between a man and woman, and they've been anti-abortion, and he's continuing that. I don't see where fault would be leveled at Pope Benedict here, and it's going to be interesting to see who the new pope is. It would be nice to see someone come from the United States sometime, but Raymond Burke's over there. He used to be in La Crosse. He's a cardinal, and Tim Dolan. So anyway, we'll see. We'll just have to see, I guess. But They're just following the longtime traditions of the Catholic Church and staying true to who they are.
Dan Capanke, former Republican State Senator from La Crosse, and Tony Palmieri, Professor of Communications at UW Oshkosh, our two guests this week for our Friday Week in Review. We will have our Week in Review quiz, and we'll talk about state issues in the news, including mining, coming up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time for our Week in Review quiz question. Here it is. All is well again in the famous Clements racing sausage family. You're familiar with that group of sausages that are a huge hit at the Milwaukee Brewers games? Well, Guido, the Italian sausage, disappeared during Cedarburg's Winter Festival 2 weeks ago after visiting a couple of pubs. He was eventually returned by two men to a local bar this past Wednesday night. Our question this week, what are the other four racing sausages? Guido, or at least his Italian sausage costume, was stolen. What are the other four racing sausages? We don't need their names, just the kind of sausage will do. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will be entitled to one of the books that we have featured on this program this past week or in recent weeks. So can you name the four other racing sausages besides the Italian sausage? We will announce the winner and the answer at the end of the Week in Review. We need to talk about state issues in our remaining time as we review the top stories of the week with Tony Palmieri and Dan Capanke. We'll get into mining in just a moment, but William in Colfax has a thought about a state budget issue that is in the news this week. Hi, Will. I'm sorry,
Hi.
It's Willem?
Willem. All right. Well, on the first part about Scott Walker being a candidate for the presidency, I don't think he could stand up to the scrutiny, and this thing that I wanted to talk about, I think, illustrates the problem with Scott Walker is that his thinking is not always that clear, and I think in this state he's been a disaster. I can't ever remember a time in our state when things have been worse. But he proposed to maybe make a penalty in insurance payments, health insurance payments for people that smoke. But smoking is a cause of, I'm not a smoker, but smoking is definitely a health problem. But this stick approach that the governor seems to favor, I don't think is the way to approach this, because what are we going to do for people that are obese? Are they have to pay a fine based on the number of soft drinks they have or how many bags of Cheetos they eat a week? Or, you know, there's other things that cause health problems other than smoking. So it's typical of the governor's approach to, like, collect the DNA from...
Yeah, I'm sure, Willem, because there's lots there and we have limited time, Willem doesn't think this is a good idea to charge state employees who smoke would be charged more for their health insurance. I think $50 a year more, or is it $50 a month? I don't remember now. But there are people reacting to this idea in the news this week. Some saying it's not going to work. It's not a good idea. But the Department of Administration is saying they're not trying to necessarily discourage people to smoke. They say that smokers cost more to insure, so that's why it's being done. Dan Capanke, what do you think of this idea?
Yeah, I think it's $50 a year, and I think it's just for state employees, I believe.
It's $50 a month. Bill Martin
just
checked.
Is it really? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite a bit. But I know that, again, if you look at the budget thing, all these and smokers, it's proven they do cost. But where do you stop? So I think this is a start. I guess that's where I'll leave that.
All right. So you're not necessarily against that idea.
No, you know, we do it when we go and apply for life insurance, they look at if you smoke and if you're 5'8" and how much do you weigh and all of that. They do it and when you buy insurance, so I'm just not sure this is that much out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of it, Tony?
You know, I'm not familiar enough with this budget proposal. But, you know, let's face it, I mean, smoking is one of the only areas that politicians, Republican or Democrat, feel comfortable in going after these days. I mean, very few people are going to defend smokers, but I'm not familiar enough with this policy. I do agree with Willem, however, that the governor on balance has not been very good for the state.
Yeah.
And I don't think his model in Wisconsin would really work at the national level very well. It's the austerity model that has been shown to be a failure all over the globe, has not worked in Wisconsin. Sequester is an austerity measure, and it's not working nationally either.
Well, let's quickly touch on some other tax issues before we talk about mining. The average taxpayer in Wisconsin would save $83 next year under Governor Walker's proposed income tax cut. What do you think of this income tax cut, Dan Kopanky?
Well, it's always a good thing if you can keep more money in the pockets of the consumers out here rather than the government take it. And so I'm in favor of any kind of a tax cut that works to keep more money in people's pockets. Now, some of this is coming from this surplus that we're projecting, and I know there's some question in parts of the in some members of the legislature as far as should we be we just built this up or should we be giving it away right away? So that's I think the debate that's going to take place, and the Joint Finance may take a hard look at this and change this in some matter, but overall, I'm certainly in favor of it.
Mm-hmm. Are you, Tony?
You know, this reminds me of Tommy Thompson's tax rebate back in, I think it was 99 or 2000, when, you know, if you think about it, you know, the governor back then had a surplus. It would have been smart to create some kind of rainy day fund, which would have helped out much throughout the 2000s. To me, I mean, we've got economists throughout the state who are saying that this particular tax cut won't have much impact on the economy. I mean, the governor's been bragging about a surplus. Why then try and create another deficit scenario with this? So, you know, it's looking very political. It's looking like the governor wants to be able to go into his reelection campaign saying, I cut taxes, and potentially a presidential campaign. And it is unfortunate when public policy decisions are made on what looks to be pretty blatant political grounds.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a couple of Republican lawmakers are proposing a pair of sales tax holidays, one in August and one in November. The bill would waive sales tax for those entire weekends. Is this a bill that ought to pass the legislature, Dan Kopanky?
I'm not sure. I'm not totally on board with this proposal. I think we have if we have a problem with the sales tax, then we ought to look at the entire package, and if it needs to be remodeled or changed, then we should change it. But to do a couple weekends, I'm just not sure that's going to be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is interesting, Joy, because I don't know enough about the specifics of this legislation, but this is something that progressives possibly could get behind. I mean, the sales tax is one of the most regressive of taxes out there. And so to give people a chance to make some purchases without that sales tax for a couple of weekends, that might actually be an economic boost, and it would actually be good for middle class and lower middle class and poor to have a couple of days out of the year where that sales tax doesn't kick in. So this particular sales tax holiday, to me, would make a lot more sense than what the governor is proposing.
All right, so here's the big state story of the week. The state Senate this week narrowly approved a bill that would overhaul Wisconsin's mining regulations. The Republican-controlled Senate approved the bill 17-16 on Wednesday after 9 hours of debate. The Assembly is expected to take up the bill next week, and Governor Walker is presumably going to sign this should it reach his desk. Your thoughts, Tony, on the Senate passing this mining bill?
I listened to some of the debate on Wisconsin Eye, and I thought that Dale Schultz, the lone Republican who voted against it, was right on target with his arguments about why it's not a good idea. But I also thought that Tim Cullen, the Democrat, moderate Democrat, was really spot on. He claimed the problem here is that what has disappeared in Wisconsin state politics are the environmental Republicans, and he specifically mentioned people like Warren Knowles and Lee Dreyfus, two Republican governors who were very pro-conservation, pro-environment. He even mentioned Paul Hassett, who was the late Republican, who I believe was the chair of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, who actually got along with Democrats. So other than Dale Schultz, we're just not seeing anything in the modern Wisconsin Republican Party that takes environmental protection as seriously, in my judgment, as it needs to be taken. And I think that's really the problem here. And, of course, we know this is going to pass the Assembly easily, and we know the governor will sign it. Whether any mine will ever take place is questionable. There's going to be lawsuits and what have you. So, anyway, I thought Schultz and Cullen were really the shining stars in this, and it's unfortunately they did not prevail.
Yeah, the minority Democrats said that this bill relaxed environmental protections. It opened the door to pollution that could devastate the region. The Republicans were saying that the mine could create hundreds of jobs and would do so responsibly with the environment. Dan Kopanky, your thoughts?
Well, that is the argument, that this does strike a balance between the protecting the environment and attracting jobs and growing jobs here in Wisconsin, which we talked about earlier. We don't have enough of them. And so, you know, and to Tony's point, I think if you look at Senator Rob Cole's record, Republican in the state Senate, you will find that he's been very diligent over the years in protecting Wisconsin's environment. And you also have a long 420-day with an additional 60-day permit process. You have to have the DNR sign on. You have to have the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers sign on. I think we have enough people that understand this law and understand our environment and will make sure that we're going to have a mining here in Wisconsin again, and it's going to be safe for our environment.
Joy in Pulaski is with us. Hello, Joy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good. What's your question?
Good. My question is I know how they're saying how many jobs are coming or be made here. What was the exact number? Was it 100 and some? Or?
Well, I heard 3,000. I've heard 700. I've heard many. Okay. How many jobs are we going to get out of this, do you think, if it happens, Dan Kopanky?
Well, I know initially it's going to be 700, but there's going to be, at least that's what the number was in the Sentinel recently. But there's going to be many other companies that are going to be enjoying additional employment because of mining here in Wisconsin, including in Milwaukee, in Prairie du Chien, in La Crosse, throughout this state. So I think that'll grow to 2,000, 2,500 jobs here in Wisconsin.
You know what? We're almost out of time, and I just was told, Joy, that you are the quiz winner. Congratulations. Wow, that doesn't happen very often.
No.
And you were the randomly selected winner. Can you tell us on the air, besides the Italian sausage, what are the four other racing sausages?
Yep, I'm not real good at saying it, but the chorizo.
Yeah,
that was my favorite
chorizo,
one.
Uh-huh.
Then, yeah, the chorizo, there you go, and she sent it to me. Hot dog, the Polish sausage is the kielbasa from Pulaski here, and then it's bratwurst, and of course, our Italian sausage.
There you go, and you got them all. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Joy, and congratulations. You will be contacted after the show, and you will be offered a choice of books that we featured on the program recently. So.
Thank you so much, and thanks for your show. It's very awesome.
All right. Thank you very much, Joy. We appreciate you playing the quiz, too. That doesn't happen very often. Anyway, apparently the two men who ripped off and dropped off the Guido costume plopped him on a bar stool. They told the bartender that she didn't see anything and took off. Anyway, no word on whether the two were caught or charges are coming. Guido has been through some tough times before. He was the sausage who in 2003 was whacked with a baseball bat by Randall Simon? Randall Simon of the Pittsburgh Pirates as he raced by the team's dugout. Anyway, that was kind of a fun story from this week. Dan or Tony, do you have a favorite sausage of the racing sausages?
Well, as an Italian-American, love the Italian one.
Yeah, you know what? I always bet on the Italian one when I'm at a home a brewer game, and it never wins.
I know.
So, Dan, what about you? You must have one.
I like the Browers, and by the way, we've had the Clement sausages at Copeland Park here, and it's quite a hit with the fans.
Oh, great.
That sounds like fun. Well, I hope to catch a game this summer. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony Palmieri and Dan Kopanky are guests this week for the Week in Review. We'll have more on mining and other news in state politics coming up in our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.